Hey everybody, in this episode of Entire Monos, it's not a bonus like the last one, this is a full-fledged hour and some change long episode, so we're back to that. That's great, and this time I have on a guest, my friend Kururu Forever. You can find her on Twitch where she does plenty of content and streaming. She does art streams, karaoke streams sometimes, as well as other streams with other content creators, other VTubers. And we also on Saturdays have our show together called Reconnected, where we explore Nigerian culture, African culture, Black culture, and culture in general. In this episode of Hentai Hermanos, however, she is on because she had some things she wanted to get off her chest regarding trans representation in One Piece and how the community reacts to it, and some discourse has been going on. I found it very interesting. I had no idea what was going on, so I just let it go off when explaining, and then I put my two cents in from what I could gather going on in that conversation. It was really interesting, very eye-opening for me, considering I didn't really know what was going on until she brought it to my attention. We ended up having some good some chat interaction. It was very nice and unexpected. I did end up having to like figure out how the fuck Twitch works live. So you can see me, you hear me flop around on that. Yeah, it was a good episode. Very educational, I think. Check it out. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Hentai Hermanos. We are back. I keep saying I'm going to do more and more content. If you keep up with the podcast on all your other podcasting platforms instead of just on my stream, you'll know that I posted a little bonus episode where I was really mad for no reason. And now, very quickly after that, you're getting a whole ass episode. So lucky y'all. And today we have a special guest. I'd like to introduce yourself.
Hello. I am Kururu Forever, but you can call me Kuru.
Yeah, we've recorded on here before, but just not streamed. We recorded and that got lost along with a lot of other stuff.
You'll never hear it.
No, that's fact. It's the lost footage. But we also record together on your stream.
Yes.
Yes, we have a show
every Saturday.
Almost every Saturday.
Almost every Saturday. Over on my channel on Twitch or on Kururu Forever, you can find us on Reconnected, where we talk about Black and African and diaspora culture, mostly. We focus specifically on Nigeria.
I don't know how to do it. How do I do the thing?
It's exclamation point NSO.
I did that backwards.
Yes, and he learning the ropes of streaming live.
Live and in person.
You can see him grow.
It didn't do it.
It didn't do it? Maybe you don't have it set.
Maybe I don't.
Set the command, bro.
All right, that's fine. You see the thing there. You can go on and follow her.
Yeah, I'm right there.
She does all tons of things. She does art streams. She does the video game.
I sing badly.
Yeah, the karaoke
streams. I do it all.
She's Italian.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the main entertainment point, really.
Yeah, but today you actually contacted me to come on the stream this time because you had something on your chest you wanted to get off.
I was incensed.
Yo, why don't you let the people know what's been biting at you? Yo.
Okay, so what was happening is that I was catching up on One Piece. I'm not done yet. I am around I think less than 100 chapters behind. I'm not that far. I'm that far behind. But what I did basically is, you know, I got to the newest thing. I don't know how much spoilers we can.
Let me just big spoilers for all of One Piece. Just off top.
For
big
the
spoilers.
Manga, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the anime is already up to date with what I'm going to talk about. But I'm not going to spoil like big things. I'm just going to talk about certain characters. So spoilers ahead for Wano, the Wano arc. But yes, so I got to Wano and I got to the big fight that they're currently going through. And there have been a couple characters throughout that have really caught my attention, namely Okiku and Yamato. Mm-hmm. And so I thought Yamato was a very nice character. I really like the concept of a very tall, like 3 meters tall woman.
Oh, can I get that samurai in American?
I don't freak it out.
I need the freedom units. You keep talking. I'm going to look up 3 meters.
She's like 3 meters, yeah. So that's a lot.
Damn, she's almost 10 feet tall.
Yes, exactly. And she's a samurai, which is super cool. And so basically they confirmed during the series that Okiku was born as a male. Okay, so I wanted to do some fan art of Okiku. I was like, wow, great trans woman. I love her. Let me do some fan art. Let me look up some facts on the wiki. So I went over on the wiki and everything is written in masculine form. And I was like, what is going on over here? So on the official One Piece wiki, the article for Okiku was written in he form, referring to Okiku as a he. But Okiku in the series, when it is revealed that she was born as a male, you know, Chopper asks, oh, you're a man? And she replies, I am a woman at heart. And I took that to mean I am a woman. Like, you should see me as a woman because that's how I feel that I am, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem that a huge part of the fandom does not agree with that. So over on the wiki, there was this huge, long discussion on the editing page for Okiku's article about whether to use he or she pronouns. And I thought it was like the most maddening thing I've ever seen. Like, the excuses that people came up with to avoid using she, her for her were like incredibly frustrating to read through. So basically, some people were saying that she's not a trans woman because trans people did not exist during the Edo period in Japan. And that is like straight up wrong. It is just like, what? I'm sorry, straight people were only invented recently. Like, no, like, what?
Okay, yeah, let's you know what? Go through all of the points, and then we can go through these one by one. Yeah, where you explain, yeah, your arguments.
Because that was one of the most outrageous ones that I read through. But like, there were quite a few like roundabout way to just go to the fact that I don't want to call Okiku a she because I don't feel like it, basically. Another one was, well, there's no trans people in One Piece. There's only Okamas. And those are the people who come from the Kamabaka kingdom, like Ivankov. And they're not trans, you know. They don't refer to themselves as she. They're men. So Okiku is also a man. And that was another one of the arguments. And I thought it made absolutely no sense. So I don't know if you want me to like go over to other things or if you wanted to touch on like this points on about this character.
Let's start off with the whole trans people didn't exist in Edo, Japan. The main thing I'm going to say, just because like I skimmed through the doc that you made, because my whole intention for this was mainly to let you just, you know, go off. Because I don't have much to say about it, because I didn't read it all yet. I haven't gotten there yet. But I will say this much. Yo, anyone who thinks that like any kind of like queer person or queer like quote unquote genre of person didn't exist before like 2010 or some shit, you're just wrong, yo. Like there's language changes to where like there's different ways to describe people. Like we have different words to describe people now, but like thoughts and feelings like this have been around like since the dawn of man. Like,
exactly.
You can't just ignore that. It's not going to be like mainstream history, and in some cases it is, and you just like ignore it. But
exactly, it's easier like, for people. There are documentations of people living as trans, like from way back when. But people are just like, no, it was different. It's not the same thing.
But it's also like, if we've talked about this on Reconnected, you should also check that out on Saturdays. But like, when you are someone who is a part of a community, it's easier to tell when other people are part of your community or when things are being hinted at towards that community. And so with like queer coding, like that kind of works not only in media, but also with real life, where you can see or understand when things are written in a way to where they're trying to describe someone as being queer without actually using that kind of wordage.
Exactly. Mm.
Or even the words that they had at the
read
time.
Read between the lines.
For example, sometimes people will just say that there's something odd about them or something flamboyant. Like, see, people will say different things that are hinting at.
They seem a bit queer.
Yeah, they'll even say that directly, but in the like old English way of the word. But it's like, yeah, no, dog, like it's been around forever. Like, just because you didn't know about it until 2014 doesn't mean that it didn't exist. But yo, please proceed to go off.
Yes, I will proceed to go off. So Okiku is a she, please refer to her as such. One other thing that I wanted to say about her character is that Eiichiro Oda sensei is not helping. I know that he's kind of bound by the fact that he's publicizing the comic on Shonen Jump, so he has like so much room to work with. Obviously, he can't go and say, you know, this character is trans. You know, that will put off a lot of the audience, I think, for that that kind of like content, especially with something as big as One Piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted to keep it simple and easy to digest for the bigger audience, and I understand that. Like, yeah, but the thing is that in the little like book with the extra information that he put out, that's called the Viver card, he put as the gender for Yamato male. for Okiku.
Mm.
So he put down male. The thing is that the word for sex and gender in Japanese is the same. So it could be to intend, well, Yamato was born as male, so his sex is male. But, you know, people took it as like, well, Eiichiro Oda said that Yamato, that Okiku is male, so we should call her a he. And that's like, it's just like super confusing, you know, it doesn't clear up anything for the fandom, and people are just using it as ammo to kind of go against like just calling Okiku she. Like, come on, for God's sake, please. She literally says in the manga, I am a woman at heart. What more do you need? Like, if somebody told you that, wouldn't you think, oh, they're a woman?
No, yeah, that's like one of like the most basic like queer coding 101 phrases right there.
Exactly. And it's pretty straightforward as well. It's not even like that roundabout. It's you know, as explicit as you can get without straight up saying, I was born a man, but I refer to myself as a woman. And apparently somebody pointed out, but I am not 100% sure about this, that that is a very common phrase used by trans people to explain their gender in Japan. So saying like, I am this at heart, but in my body, I am this, is very commonly used in the trans community in Japan. But I had no way to like fact check that point. But yeah, that was pretty much it about Okiku. And I want to go over to another character who's a bit more vague in the representation, and that is Yamato, which I've been mistakenly saying the whole time. So Yamato is basically, this one is really confusing. You're up to date, right?
No, I told you I'm not. Real quick, I do want to address this chat real quick. From Destroyer ARP, they say you can call the person whatever you want. It's not like you can upset Kiku since she's a fictional character. She's a fictional character. It's not about upsetting a, because I see people make this argument a lot online when it comes to representation in general. It's not about upsetting a fictional character. We know that she doesn't exist and that she doesn't have like real life feelings. It's about like the idea of
waifu.
No, yeah, it's about the idea of like what she like stands to represent and like the real life people that can empathize with her existence within the medium. So if you have a character that is hinted at or is explicitly supposed to be a part of a certain community that is marginalized in real life, and people aren't respecting that or people aren't taking that seriously, well, then it reflects poorly on the people that are readers that have engagements with that community or are part of that community. So it's not about the character as a character and their feelings. It's about the broader implications of, on the fandom and real life people.
Yeah, it's about the attitude you bring to the table, really. Because if you're saying, well, I'm going to call this fictional character whatever I want, it's gonna just send like that message. It's going to ripple through like real life as well. Like, what's going to stop you then to just call a real person whatever you want? Because maybe they can't hear you. Like, they're not present in the room. So, you know, I'm going to misgender this person because they're not here. They can't hear me. Like, it's kind of on the same line of logic. It's really an exercise in just being respectful of people's wishes, even if it's just a fictional character. I think we can kind of use it as a jumping off point to talk about real life issues, you know? But yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like it's like saying, oh, I can write about kicking cats and dogs. They're fictional. They won't mind. But like, I'm going to think, why are you like enjoying writing about kicking cats and dogs so much? You know, it's like, but I've seen this argument as well. You know, I've seen people be like, well, I'll address this character as I want. Because they're not real. But I don't think it's, I don't think it reflects well on the community as a whole. But yeah, like moving on to the, like, Yamato, this is like a way more vague case. So you're not up to date. You haven't met Yamato yet, right?
No.
Okay, so I'll give like a little bit of a background. So Yamato is Kaido's son slash daughter. I guess I'll call them they, because this one is very, very vague. So Yamato basically calls themselves the reincarnation of a character that's already dead in at the point in time, and that's Oden. And they want to be addressed as if they were Oden, right?
Okay.
So It's not explicit whether Yamato wants to be addressed as he, him, because Oden was a guy. But it's pretty explicit that they kind of want to be him. Like, they want to be addressed as Oden. They want to be Oden as much as possible. And Kaido calls Yamato their son, specifically. He uses Musko instead of Musume in Japanese, which is son. And the other characters, I mean, Yamato is obviously like represented as a woman, you know, in on the opposite side of like Okiku, who is you know, obviously represented as a woman despite being born male, while Yamato is very obviously a woman in their appearance, and they don't really seem to mind people like pointing out that they're a woman. So it's a very gray area there. But one point that I heard that was very interesting was actually what I was talking to my boyfriend, who is also up to date. He said that, well, if Yamato wants to be called, you know, like Oden, he, him, then we should use him pronouns for Yamato as well, because that's what they would want, right? Which is pretty much like the same argument that we were making before for Okiku as well. And I thought that was an interesting point, you know. But we got some comments in chat. Do you want to go through them?
Let's see here. What do you have to say?
So, do you want me to read to them?
Time out. I was trying to... I didn't realize I had that on public. I was trying to make sure that nothing was saying bad was being said and it was on public. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Clear chat after this, but let's see. No, I was not actually trans and never wanted to be. It was about abuse from Kaido, who forced Yamato to be his son because he wanted a son. Yamato doesn't care about gender. In the story, Yamato doesn't want to be a he or a she. Yamato wants to be Kozuki Oden. You know, I'll say this much. Respect to the story ARP for having a genuine like argument that has to do with the story. Mm-hmm. And not just being transphobic here. And then they also say, some people don't understand, but if you read in Japanese, you will get what's going on there. Kaido is really abusive father. This is a very interesting argument, actually, Destroyer ARP. This is like a pretty thought-provoking one. Again, I also appreciate the lack of like phobia going on here, and but I am unfortunately going to have to clear the chat because I actually only had on my blocked terms on public.
Okay.
Kuru, if you'd like to address that.
No, definitely. This is why I've been using they, them pronouns the whole time. Like, Yamato is obviously a very vague, you know, case. What would you use? As Destroyer ARP said, they don't want to be a he or a she. And that is the reason why I'm using they, them pronouns. They're kind of an in-between kind of state, but also like the fact that they want to be Kozuki Oden, that it kind of implies that they want to be addressed the same way Oden was addressed. But that is not quite, like, it's not explicitly mentioned. They want to be this person. And it's true they don't care about like their gender in this case, but if they want to be the person, wouldn't they want to be the person's gender as well? If they want to embody everything that this person was, like, because right. It's very like literal the way like that Yamato wants to be Oden. It's really like, I want to be called Oden, and I want to like have this person's memories, because like Yamato has like a diary with all of his like entries about his journeys and all of that. So they reference like things that have happened to Oden as though they happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it would make sense then if you would kind of want to respect Yamato's wishes, then you would address them as Oden and call them he.
No, I think it's just sense.
Like, yeah.
No, yeah, because that makes perfect sense to me. Because if it's still another person that Yamato is trying to like embody and identify as, and that person also has a gender, so wouldn't it make sense for them to want to like wholeheartedly be identify, which would mean also identifying by the same pronouns, same gender?
Mm-hmm. I think that would make sense, right?
Yeah,
because but you know, it's not explicitly said, so there is an argument there to be said that like, well, they don't care about wanting to be that gender specifically, they just want to embody the idea of this person, which then would be like, okay, you know, that's fine.
That makes the arguments make more sense, but then that we're on the same page here, where it calls into question like, why is the argument so heavy on the pronouns then, if we can agree that Yamato wants to embody Kozuki Oden, and Kozuki mm-hmm. Oden's gender is he, him, then why is referring to Yamato as he, him, like, an issue?
Yeah.
If that's also a part of that identity.
I don't think it should be an issue. I think, like, it would make less sense to refer to Yamato as she, her, in that case. Like, I think, like, I'm heavily leaning for like they them because of like the how vague the whole thing is, but like I think like the thing that would make the more sense would be like either they them or he him at that point. But again, on the One Piece Wiki, they use the pronouns she her for Yamato, and there has been a huge kind of talk about that, and the final blow that they've been using like the pronouns they them for a while, but the final blow that kind of like set in the female pronouns on Yamato's wiki page was the fact that Oda again, thank you Oda Sensei, on the Beaver card wrote Yamato's gender as female, which again. Female and gender and sex in Japanese is the same word, and you know Yamato's sex is indeed female, but people took that and they were like, look, Yamato is a girl, so she, her, it is.
That's the thing that really sucks about having like representation, particularly of like the LGBTQ plus community in multiple languages and in languages that like are like very have different origins from a large focal chunk of the audience, is that there's going to be these kinds of like misunderstandings and stuff where it's very difficult to very clearly state what the intentions are, or infer rather, because the only person that can clearly state the intentions of the author is the author, but to clearly infer the intentions of the author when the discourse is happening between a bunch of people that don't natively speak the language. But again, I will continue to refer back to the idea of queer coding and coding in general for representation and communities that have experience with these things, being able to figure that out much easier than those who don't. And I think that would be also a good time to go back to the comments, because Destroyer ARP came back with some more with some responses, and we also have some more chatters.
Hello, everybody! Welcome, welcome.
First of all, destroy ARP. And Kozuki Oden for Yamato doesn't represent idea of gender. For them, Kozuki Oden is the person with most freedom, like Luffy wanting to be Pirate King. That's a very good point. Again, yeah. I do appreciate they're making a lot of really great points. And they said no transphobia here, just personal opinion. One of my best friends is trans, LOL. again, really, truly appreciate that. And, you know, everyone's allowed to have an opinion. So we're just here for this discussion.
Yeah, everybody's having a nice... you know, like proper discussion here, you know, we're being adults.
Yeah. Hey, Usamblo, what's happening, man? Welcome back. He says, love you. Love you too, dog. OW Anchors, that's love the real MT. You know it's me. Yo. But the Destroyer brought up a really, did bring up an interesting point with comparing Yamato wanting to be Odin to Luffy wanting to be Pirate King. And the idea of like what that represents to them as opposed to it being about gender, I think that's an interesting take right there. Yeah. What do you think?
I think like I think it's very interesting because Luffy does want to be Pirate King, but it's not like he wants to be Goldie Roger, right? So there's that difference. I get it that Yamato like loves the idea of like being as free as Odin was because they grew up with like reading about their adventure out on the sea, but they kind of really latched onto like specifically the idea of being this person, becoming this person, which is really like what makes the difference here. It's not like, oh, I want to go out to the sea and become like Odin was, really free and a great pirate. I want to become him. I want to be called as he was, and I want to, like, you know, use like his memories, his memoir, to help his help out his friends as if they were my friends, because I want to basically be the reincarnation of this character. So that's like the main difference between the two ideas, I think.
Yeah, and this is more of an anecdotal thing from me too, because having like talk with like trans people and also having like my own journey with gender throughout the years, a lot of people who I've talked to, or like a handful of people I've talked to, have talked about how they would latch on to characters and at a young age. And they'd want to be those characters or want to be those people, like actors or musicians. And they find out later, or even like real people that they knew, that they looked up to or that they admired. And they find out later after they came out that the reason that they were so enthralled by that person's aesthetic, person of the opposite birth sex, opposite, quote unquote, there's more than two genders. But yeah. Putting that out there, don't cancel me, dog. I'm on your side. but the appeal of that person or those people and wanting to be them was gender envy. Yeah. And you can also argue that like being able to express your true gender identity also encompasses that idea of freedom as well. So there's again, you can read into a lot of that with the whole idea of Kozuki Oden and not making it all about gender, but about this mix of things that also relate to the gender identity of Yamato.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like the point that, you know, freedom can also represent freedom of gender. That is completely true. And yeah, I hadn't thought about this, but it's true that a lot of people that I know that also have like their own like gender journey have really latched on like specific characters and certain aesthetics and have kind of used that to guide them as, you know, as they went through like their journey. So that is a really good kind of metaphor for it. But as we, I mean, as we said, like Yamato is a very weird kind of example because of their thing that they want to be someone else. I mean,
yeah,
that's because a crime, that's
what
bro.
That's what I was gonna bring up. Is like Kiku seems like a way more straightforward, whereas Yamato,
yeah.
Again, with like in with Destroyer's like arguments here, I'm like Yamato seems like a one that. That even I'm like after this conversation, I'm still on the fence on.
Yeah.
So like what the as far as like inferring authorial intent. But I could see it either way is where I'm at, where I'm like, for my own comfortability, I think like referring to Yamato either by like whatever they say in the manga when I get to that point, or like they would be like safest. But like that, it definitely brings up an interesting conversation for sure. Because again, like it could be an instance of like unintentional queer coding, or it could be intentional. We wouldn't really know unless we talk to Oda. I think it'd be good to be open to that idea into that conversation.
Yeah. But like, it's not the first time he has included queer characters.
Yeah.
He's obviously included trans people in his work before, so it's not like he doesn't know. I feel what he's doing, like he must know that he's kind of creating like this like sense of confusion around like, so Yamato this or that, but I think it's way more like digestible like it, in Japan, because the language there is so much more neutral, like in respect to gender. Like if we take it on a spectrum, I think like, you know, Japanese has very little gendered speech. English has a little bit of a gender speech, and languages like Italian and Spanish are like hyper gendered, where like every single object has a gender. So it kind of becomes hard when you translate the work, and then you go, okay, I want to translate it into Italian, but now I have to choose because I have no choice for a neutral, and you know, I have no choice of like omitting the gender because it's impossible. You can't refer to a person without gender in them. So then it becomes like a question: what am I going to do? Am I going to refer to Yamato as a she through the whole thing, or as a he?
I think there's another.
And that's like, oh, my bad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just gonna say, I think there's another like conversation to be had about how a lot of like queer discourse is kind of what's the word I'm trying to use here is not gatekept, but very much like centered around Eurocentric languages, particularly English.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
And how limiting that is on a global scale for people, and even people just with multiple cultures. I've seen online in a lot of like webtoon artists and stuff have talked about how growing up bilingual, particularly Spanish speakers have talked about this, growing up bilingual in a very like gendered language, it's difficult for them to figure out their like what proper pronouns they want when they are non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
When their language doesn't really have that. And exactly. Instead of like, there's not a lot of talk online, that's at least not that I've seen outside of like this very niche circle, that talks about like what can be done for people of other languages, of these highly gendered languages, to refer to themselves as when they don't fit the gender binary, what the experience of trans people and queer people outside of, you know, a mainly English speaking world really looks like, and what it looks like in media in particular. I think that conversations where people are arguing against the points that you're making here by trying to bring up the other languages and how like, oh, in Japanese they say this, but it could just like not really mean that, or like how Oda put in male and female for the sexes, but sex and gender is the same word. I think that like that language barrier and that limitation in like having a very narrow mindset from one's native language makes it more difficult for, or it can possibly make it more difficult for LGBTQ plus people in other cultures and who are multicultural to like feel accepted and to be able to speak like for themselves because of like a lack of specificity for in their language. And I think that it'd be just a more open conversation and mindset on how language is used in queer media and in media that may or may not be adding in queer characters and representation should be had, instead of simply being like, no, this is factually incorrect. it's just like, man, well, like, language is very difficult, and then if it's not your native language, it makes it more difficult. And if your language lacks something here or there, or is very stringent in another area, then you have to kind of find workarounds to be able to make it represent what you're trying to represent. And if you say that someone's simply not doing that, then you know, you're devaluing and disregarding something that you really don't know much about, to be honest.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's, I think it's a very interesting conversation to be had about how can we expand, how can we like circumvent the problem of having to translate a work that includes something that is not translatable in your language, like, mm-hmm. you know, non-binary identities, and having to translate that into Italian or Spanish, like what do you use? How do you go around that? Do you just ignore it? Then you're kind of raising that part of the representation from the work, and you're, you know, it kind of works toward like having a completely binary society. You don't offer people another option. They don't see it around the media because everything has to be either this or that. And yeah, you're basically just gatekeeping the gender binary at that point. Mm. It's like, well, there's only two boxes that you can fit in, this or that. There is literally no other choice that you can express with your words. So I think there is a very interesting conversation to be had about how can we like go around that problem. You know, what can we use to express gender neutrality in these type of languages?
Yeah.
Thank you, Destroyer.
Thank you, Destroyer, for coming by. And thank you for the points that you brought up. They were very interesting.
Yeah, it was definitely. It definitely got us thinking a little bit, mm-hmm. and it's good to have somebody, you know, bringing up different points as well.
Especially since I haven't read this far, so I didn't even I didn't even see it that way because I couldn't have.
but yeah, we went on like a little tangent there about language, but I think it was very much necessary as well, because it kind of reflects on English as well. If in Japanese you can get away with not looking at gender in the same way, like in English you can't get away with that. In English you have to put a subject in, and it has to be either, you know, he, she, it, they, them, all of that. In Japanese, you can get away with literally not ever including the subject and basically saying, you know, gender doesn't exist. And, you know, like you can get away with not mentioning a character's gender throughout the entire work and leaving it up in the air, but you can't really do the same thing in English. And that's why people are having these discussions. Because Oda chose specifically to leave that up in the air. But I think it's an interesting discussion to be had anyway, like in that regard.
Yes, yeah, definitely an interesting discussion.
Yeah. Let me see if I wanted to mention anything else about Yamato. Yeah, as we said, Kaido refers to Yamato as his son, but as Destroyer said, Yamato is a very abusive father who wanted a son specifically, so can take that one as, you know, definitive proof.
Right.
Obviously.
I was going to mention that. I was going to ask what you thought on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Everybody calls, like, Yamato the son of Kaido around Kaido, but they're all like his lackeys, so obviously they wouldn't go against his words. But I, the thing is that Yamato hasn't really like countered that yet. Maybe they haven't had a chance yet, but they never really like specifically said, "Oh, don't call me your son. I'm your daughter." They kind of just went with it. So you can kind of read into that as well. But other things that I want to talk about with trans representation in One Piece, as I said, like these are not the first times we've seen explicitly queer characters in One Piece. As we mentioned before, there's the whole like okamas on One Piece. So all the people who come from Kamabaka Kingdom are called okama. And that is a real term in Japanese. But the thing is that okama is kind of, it's considered a slur, basically. At least in the trans community in Japan, it's not very well seen as a term, because it's kind of like in the same vein as queer. You know, it's it came to be seen as like strange, like someone who doesn't fit, especially male born people who don't fit like the idea of masculinity. Those people are usually called okama.
That's what I've seen mostly.
Yeah. And some people accept it. They kind of like, you know, reclaim it. They're like, yes, I am an okama. Ha ha ha. But I think like the consensus is that it's like, it's not a very good term because it is seen as kind of like a spectacle. Like when you called an okama in Japan, you are basically being called weird. And that is really bad in Japan. Like not fitting into like the mold is especially frowned upon in Japanese society. So being called weird is extra bad over there. And the fact that Oda chose to kind of include this in the series kind of has like weird implications. I mean, you know, One Piece started off in 1999,
I believe.
Yeah, I think the manga started in 1999. So I guess they started off like with pretty dated ideas already. So I can see it from like that point of view. And I can tell that he kind of wanted to go back to it, because eventually during the Impel Down arc, when they met Ivankov, they stumbled upon the new Kamas. And, you know, they had this whole like thing of like, well, the new Kama in Impel Down, as opposed to the normal Okamas, they're more free. And they're more like free to express themselves in any way they want. And they were represented in a much more positive light than the Okama, the normal Okama in Kamabaka Kingdom. And I think that was kind of his way of like going back on that, being like, okay, I shouldn't have used this word Okama, and I'm gonna try and like rectify that by introducing the new Kama, who are like the upgraded version.
But that's,
so I thought that was like really funny.
Honestly, that's funny. It's like, yo, it's like, oh man, I probably shouldn't have like called them the queers. I'll call them the cool queers.
The like, cool queers. Like, the okay queers.
Yo. It's like, all right, dog, you could have just came up with another name. You didn't have to still reference it.
I mean, I think as a piece of word building, I think it works really really well, because Ivankov is the king, the so-called like king of Kamabake kingdom, and so him going like, well, actually I've decided to come up with a different name for my people, works really well, because now you can get rid of all the Okama, and you know, you can put Ivankov back in his throne, and him being like, well, from now on we're all called the new Kama, yay. Goodbye to the slur. But yeah, I thought that was a very funny piece of world building, but it does show that he is aware of what he's doing.
Hmm.
It really like kind of like highlights the fact that, okay, I shouldn't have put in a transphobic slur in my work that doesn't hold up in this age, in this day and age.
Ross said, whoopsie.
And, but he has included like trans people in the Okama stuff. And a lot of really cool characters actually are Okama. So I don't think he ever wanted, like he never had like bad intentions, mm-hmm, in the way he represented things. It was just like, he was a bad execution.
Yeah, that's what like, it seems like. Yeah.
Good intentions, kind of iffy executions. Like a lot of the cool characters, like Bon Clay, Ivankov, and some more from like the Kamabaka Kingdom are Okama, and they proudly, you know, say, "Well, I am an Okama, and that's okay, you know, like that's cool." But in the same time, at the same time, you can't just be like, "I am slur," and that is fine.
I am slur.
So there's like, you know, positives and negatives. But Bon Clay is a really good character, and I think like that kind of a lot of people who want to defend their portrayal of Okamas and all of that always mentioned him and Ivankov as being like actually like really, really good characters who everybody loves and who have only been helpful to Luffy and his crew throughout their journeys. So there, I don't think there ever was like bad intentions with that. It was just kind of a minefield that he Oda fell into.
Well, yeah, because as praise for Oda, I suppose, it goes against the typical way of having queer representation in media, where it's like, oh, it's a implicitly gay figure that's like the villain, that's like highly, yes, effeminate, mm-hmm, or something. Mm-hmm. These are like helpful, cool characters that people really, yeah, like.
Although Bon Clay does start off as a villain.
That are only villains.
It was
that
Mr. Two working for Crocodile at the beginning.
Yeah.
So he was like the villain.
An antagonist.
But yeah, exactly. He kind of changed. He changed sides very quickly there. So, so it is a really cool like subversion of the trope. I agree. Yeah. But yeah, one thing that he still falls into though, is the way they look, obviously. That's the most obvious thing.
Yeah.
It's the typical, it's a man in a dress. Look at his hairy legs and his stubbly chin. Isn't it weird? So funny.
Yeah.
It's very iffy. So, as much like as I want to give him credits for like having good characters be queer, I can't help but kind of feel like I really feel uncomfortable having these characters be like the queer representation, because basically one really like parallel that I thought of was like, you know, Mr. Popo in Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
So imagine if he was a really cool major character, but he still looked like Mr. Popo.
Yeah. Well, there actually is a slightly better example of this. In Shaman King,
Okay.
I forget his name. Usamblo knows what I'm talking about because we had a discussion about this personally.
Okay. I don't know all the characters in Shaman King.
There's like just a like very clearly like it's a black child. It's a but he's like he's. Let me see if I can find his.
Does he look like a minstrel representation of?
Yep.
Okay, I see. It's Joko.
Joko, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, in the OG. In the OG, he has like straight up like the minstrel show, like big lips and everything. I had a discussion with my boy about that because he's a huge Shaman King fan, and they redesigned him in the remake.
Yeah.
And in the remake, they got rid of his humongo lips. And,
oh my god!
And he was like, "How do you feel about that? Like, I don't think they needed to like redo his design." Like, and I was like, "Oh no, dog! Like, I get like you didn't grow up with this, so you don't understand."
Yeah,
like,
no, they
that's
needed
a racial like that's like a racial stereotype. Like, that's literally based on like homegrown racism, like straight racism, yep. And like. Not saying that the creator of Shaman King is racist, but like a lot of Japanese animation was based on things like of the Disney era, which literally had racist cartoons and minstrel shows. And so a lot of designs for black anime characters are literally inspired by minstrel shows designs and straight up inarguably racist designs. And so this is one where like they changed it because like it's very clear that that was a bad representation. But mm-hmm. the character himself isn't like a like terrible racial stereotype in the way he acts. Like he's just kind of like a funny kid.
Yeah.
So it's like he at the time before his redesign, like was like, yeah, he was a cool character people liked, but it was unfortunate that he had that design and that was our representation. And mm-hmm. thankfully, the manga went, or at least the animators for the new, the remake went back and addressed that.
Exactly. So that kind of goes back to like my point of like, okay, great characters, but it looks like that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of on the same vein. Like, yes, bonus point for having a great character who is queer, but. Incredibly minus point for being a caricature of a queer person.
Yeah.
Like, not to say that there aren't people that look like that, and that's fine. Yeah, but like, sure. When all of your representation, and literally there's a whole island of people who look like that.
Yeah.
And that's like the whole point of them being there. It's not so great. You're making them the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
Instead
of normalizing it, it's supposed to be like wacky.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, because I see a lot of people saying, well, even Kof goes against like gender stereotypes, and he talks about freedom of expression, and so it's good. But you know, you put that right next to them being berated for the way that they look, and the whole thing with Sanji ending up in Kanabaka Kingdom and being incredibly disgusted by all of them because they're men in dresses. Yeah. You know, it's still very iffy.
Yeah.
And on the point of Sanji getting stranded in Kamabaka Kingdom during the time skip, that's also a very interesting point because I feel like everybody, when they got stranded on wherever they ended up during the time skip, they came out having learned something from the place they stumbled upon. And... what Sanji learned from his stay in Kamabaka Kingdom, which, by the way, is home to the Okama Kenpo, which is the martial arts that they use to fight that the Okamas used to fight. Instead of having learned the Okama Kenpo, which was like the main thing, he learned how to run from the Okamas in the sky. Which is like,
that's a bad look.
Why?
That's a bad look.
He could have just learned Yokama Kenpo, which literally was being taught to him by this master of it on the island before the time skip. But no. So I thought like that was like incredibly frustrating because like, oh, Zoro went on to be taught by Mihawk on Kuragaina Island. And Usopp learned on the island to become really buff.
Yeah, he learned to get swole.
He learned the art of protein nutrition. you know, and Nami
learned how to
to use the weather, right?
Yeah, sure.
And Robin was learning about archaeology stuff or stuff like that. From the scientists, or I think that was it. you know, everybody like used the environment they were in to learn from it. But then you have Sanji who went on Kamabaka Kingdom and got traumatized, came back with being more of a misogynist than he was before.
No, he didn't know.
And having learned how to fly in the sky just by himself.
Bro went, learned how to be a Sigma male.
So that was like a point that I've seen being made online and that I thought was very interesting and very frustrating about Sanji's character. Because before the time skip, I thought he was pretty... I didn't like him a lot. I'm not a big Sanji fan. Sorry for all the stands out there.
We know some people that are going to be hating you for that.
but no, I didn't like Sanji that much before. But after the time skip, I hated him.
Crazy.
Like, he came back and was like, oh, I'm going to have like a whole thing whenever I see a woman now. And like, that's even more annoying than he was before already. Like, it was already annoying before, but now you've really taken it up to 100. And, you know, like, people were like, oh, I wish you went to Kamabaka Kingdom and learned to respect women from the Okamas, who know, you know, they have a heart of a woman. That's how they're described again. Mm. And, you know, they could have taught him to, like, kind of be to how to be like in the shoes of a woman, because when he's first like put on the island, there's this whole scene where they put him in a dress and he feels bashful about like kicking because he doesn't want to raise his skirt. And he starts to understand how a woman feels. But it's all used as a joke and dropped there immediately and never brought back again. While that was like such a good chance for character development of him being like, oh, I understand how women feel now. I'm gonna stop like being a creep and start actually like respecting women now. but no, we didn't get that. We got the total opposite. So there's that.
Okay, Bakuru, I have a question. How's respecting women gonna help find the One Piece?
That's a great question. It all depends on what the One Piece is.
That's true.
It the misogyny we learned along the way?
The misogyny we had along the way, yeah. That's still a true One Piece.
It depends, you know. Maybe the One Piece is actually just the Okama, the heart of a woman we all had inside of us. but you know, I thought it was a good chance for character development, but we had a character development. So I'm sorry again to all the Sanji stans, but Sanji kind of sucks now.
Damn, hot take. That's the hottest take you've had this whole hour.
I know, I'm gonna get canceled tomorrow. I'm gonna trend on Twitter, but like, oof. Kuru disrespected Sanji.
Damn.
But yeah, I mean...
is that all you got on your chest? You feeling better?
I think so. I think that's most of what I wanted to touch upon. I had a few comments from... I saw a really good video on YouTube that talked about trans representation in One Piece specifically. So if you want to like Google, if you just Google trans representation in One Piece, you'll find it. It's a very, very good video, and it touches upon a lot of the things we talked about, but kind of in a more positive light. So if you want to see kind of like a different point of view to the one that I brought forward, you can go and watch that one.
Okay.
But a few of the comments that I saw there really like, you know, stuck out to me. Like we said, like about the Sanji thing, somebody said, what you say about Sanji and the Kamabaka storyline resonates so much with me. I am currently catching up on One Piece with my sister, and when we came to that part of the series, we were so horrified and angry at the portrayal of queerness in that particular storyline that we regularly had to pause the episodes to talk/rant about it. And as you said, had Sanji learned anything from that stay, I could have maybe, although it's a very big maybe, excused that, but he didn't learn anything. If anything, his love for women is played up as a joke even more, up to the point where it really isn't enjoyable anymore. We're currently nearly done with Dressrosa, so I'm curious to see what character you didn't mention in the video. Blah, blah, blah. Very informative video. I really enjoyed watching it. And this one has quite a few likes under the video, so a lot of people agree with that, and I also agreed. With what this person said, it kind of really like damps down the enjoyment of the series when you really start to notice these things. For me, like a lot of things that are very normal in anime have kind of become like a complete turn off for me. I used to watch everything I could get my hands on since I was very, very young. But now that I've grown and I started understanding how things work a little bit more, I kind of grew. I have like more of a bar that I would like my anime to get past. So a lot of like fan service for me is a big turn off in anime. Unless the anime is specifically centered around fan service, you know, if I'm going to an anime to see the fan service, that is 100% fine. I love like Queen's Blade, for example. Queen's Blade is good. And like Valkyria Drive, I really enjoyed. You know, anime that's like centered around ecchi. Like if I want to watch that, I'll watch it. It's great. But like I'm just, you know, I'm watching like my shonen series, like all my adventures with my homies, and then here, bam, comes the fan service, and I'm like, oof, okay, it's like a jump scare. Somebody like explained it as like a fan service jump scare, and that's exactly what it feels like. I'm like, oof, okay, that happened. I was like, okay, we're just gonna move on from that. Okay, it was just there. So a lot of like what I see in anime now, like I have a more of a analytical eye for all the little details. And I got past like all the Okama stuff when I didn't have that kind of like vision of anime, so I didn't like think much of it. I actually like really, I thought it was really funny when Sanji got put in a dress and, you know, he did all of that. But if I went back to it now, I think I would have the same kind of reaction as this person who commented, being like, oof, like I, you know, I don't know how to feel about this one. It's kind of a weird one for me. You know, I would have a completely different point of view on it right now. And that's because I've expanded kind of my my worldview as well.
Yeah.
So I think like these things can really be like, and I'm not trans, so I'm just a cis woman. But I think like if you are part of the minority that is being talked about, you would feel that even more. Like if for me, it's like uncomfortable, I can't imagine for like a person who is trans to see that in an anime that they really love I can think that that's like, it feels like a stab to the heart. Like, oh, you know, like, this is what the other thinks of people that are like me. Oof.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Feel you on that. Also, I just, you mentioning that you're a cis woman just made me realize, yeah, we said a queer a lot in this episode. We're both queer.
Just to clarify.
Like, we're not just talking reckless.
We're not talking just on top of other people. We are the people. I am bisexual, cisgender woman.
I'm bi or / pan and non-binary. So, if you got a, and black, so if you got a problem with me, you got a lot of things that you're gonna have to go through.
Yeah, we know the minority feel. I'm half black, half white, so.
I don't think I've ever said that I'm non-binary on recording before. All right, so.
The coming out, yeah, surprise. Everybody. Clip this one.
Don't. I'm actually, this one is. I'm not gonna keep the stream up, but I am gonna post it on the podcast. So if anyone wants to listen to this again or wants to recommend it, make sure that you follow the podcast Hentai Hermanos on your podcasting platforms like Spotify, on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, and other things such as that, Stitcher.
Yeah, go listen to the thing.
Yeah, listen to the things.
But that was it for my point. So let's, you know, if you have something to touch upon, we can do that.
I think you got it. I mean, I do want to come back and have another conversation with you regarding like our the bar that we have for anime, particularly shonen anime, because we have talked about this before in a different topic, and we've been talking about how we wanted to readdress that. Particularly we talked about shonen women's representation in shonen and like who we thought was good, and you had a hard time even like coming up with any people because you were just like, you had a much higher bar than me, admittedly. And I'm perfectly like open about like my bar for like what constitutes a good representation for a woman in shonen is fairly low, but I do think that there are that there are like pretty like good female characters that like mm-hmm. are good both just as a character and good as a female character, despite some problematic aspects of their character or the representation of their character. And we can get into that in another episode if you'd like. I'd certainly like to. I have a good handful.
I have all the hot takes on everything.
I bet. because I do think that our us having different levels of expectations, it definitely mm-hmm. comes from me growing up as like AMAB, you know, assigned male at birth, and so I've been the target audience for shonen, and so every time there's just like random huge tits on the screen of a character that gets introduced, like my like the best example I can think of is Bleach. That's the one I really want to talk about, is Bleach. Oh, yeah. Because Bleach, I've memed on this with my friends who watch Bleach, but like literally every time a new faction pops up, there's a new woman with huge tits, and not just huge tits, but like bigger ones than the last woman from the last faction. Unironically, and like that's
less
how it goes.
Covered than the last one.
Yeah, that's also very true a lot of times. And I'm just like, that's but I got like very used to that because I'm just like, that's
you
something
kind of desensitized
exactly
to that,
so it didn't become a problem for me until like I got older and had people like women in my life that are just like, I don't like these characters simply because of that. It makes me feel bad because of that representation. It's like they're just a woman with huge tits. I'm just like, well, they're not. They do the thing. They shoot the laser. it's like that's
it's
not
really
enough.
It's really not about like the characters. So I think like it's more about the male gaze that is applied to.
Yeah. And that's what like gets explained to me. Because for me, because I still got the male gaze, non-binary or not, I still be gazing male. Like,
yeah.
So I'm just like, yeah, but she shot the laser.
Male,
so
you could be gazing.
Respectfully, but I'm just like, hey, she did the thing. She had the sword. Like, it's all good, right? And it's like, no, it's not all good. Like, there's this issue here with how these women are consistently portrayed in this way, but we can get into that another time on Hentai Hermanos. So if you want to hear about that, definitely look at your notifications, keep an eye out, and we'll be coming back with some heat.
Let's go.
But yeah. Oh, do you want to plug any more of your stuff, Kudu, before we leave?
Follow my channel. I'm gonna post an emote in chat so you can follow me. Here I am, Kudu Forever on Twitch. It's Kururu for like the number and ever.
Yeah, that's KURURU number 4 EVER. Follow her on Twitch.
Follow me on Twitch. I stream random stuff. I sing really badly in the microphone whenever I'm high on Monster Energy. And overall, we have a really good time.
Yeah.
Also, every Saturday, we stream with NT Reconnected, which is a very informative program that we have going on about Nigerian culture and Black culture as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just be getting cultured. Sometimes we bring people on from other cultures and they get to explain things about their culture and their life experience.
Exactly. If you want to be on and talk about your own experience, if you're like part of a minority group, come on over. We love having guests.
Absolutely. We love those. We love those episodes. We love talking to people.
Yes.
But yeah, but this was another episode of Hentai Hermano. It's a great episode. We had some great people coming in with some things to say. Some people stopping by, just being friendly. And we had a wonderful, wonderful guest with Kudu here. And make sure you follow her. Again, Kududu Forever on Twitch. Make sure you check out all of her streams. Make sure you check out Reconnected on Saturdays. Because if you want to see me talk about some more things, because I don't come on here that often. And again, don't forget about the podcast. If you do want to hear my beautiful voice some more, I got a backlog of content. If you just look up Hentai Hermanos on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcasting platforms. All right. Y'all are beautiful. Peace.
Peace.